Hey, it's exciting to be here with you today. Richard and I both were delighted to be able to be part of two associations that share the same geography, right about 140 churches. Right. And so we're excited about coming to you today again with another consultation, this time on logistics. How does the church re-enter from a logistical standpoint? Phases, stages, all those different things. And we're excited about the panel that you're going to hear from today.
You know, we've been very fortunate to line up what we believe are well-qualified voices to speak to our pastors and church leaders about what it looks like to reemerge from this. Gary Hollingsworth, our state executive director for the South Carolina Convention, who has been very much concerned about the churches. I know that he is concerned about us reopening in a timely, also in a safe fashion. Jay Hardwick, who is our chief strategist, who has worked closely with many churches, many DOMs, to help us with advice. And these two men are going to give us their time today to help us from a state perspective understand what's going on across our state.
Yeah, and that really gives us a real specific context that we live in, South Carolina. The other one that we wanted to provide is a national context. I'm excited about the guys that are going to be on our call today. Mark Clifton is one of those guys who's working with lots of churches on the whole idea of revitalization and replanting. But Mark has got that voice and that understanding of different contexts of churches. He can nuance it really well and understand the dynamic to them. He's been doing it for years, North American Mission Board. We also have William Vanderblomen, who's been an incredible help to the church to help churches find the next leader, whether it's a pastor, executive pastor, staff. They have been pulling together some incredible resources over this whole pandemic. And so I just reached out to William and said, William, could you please give us time? And he's going to be on it. And then thirdly is Jeff Surratt. Jeff is great because Jeff works with Generis, which is also a national group that helps churches from a consultation standpoint. But Jeff's a local guy. He was part of Seacoast. And Jeff helped lead the multi-site movement there for Seacoast Church. Incredible mind, incredible heart. Worked for Rick Warren for a number of years. So he's going to be on the call with us today. So I'm excited about our panel.
Exactly. Looking forward to what God's going to do through this conversation for our pastors. I know the thing I'm hearing most is how quickly, but we want to be safe.
Right.
And so I believe the panel today is going to give us the opportunity to help answer that question.
Absolutely. And one of the things that we want to provide for you as we try to serve the churches is what we call a dashboard. We're all driving a different car now. In fact, we'll talk about this in the panel, but it feels like we've gone from automatic to manual five-speed.
Yes.
And we're all learning how to drive again. And so what we want to do in this video today is talk about what's the dashboard that you're using for your church. Your church is unique in where it is, who it is, all of those things. So what are the gauges that you're watching, both the windshield in front of you, the window behind you, the gauges you're reading, the warning signals, the speed that you're going, all those things are important. So we want to give that to you through this panel today.
You know, Craig, as we think about using this analogy of our dashboard, I'm thinking that no matter where I go in the world, as many of our listeners have, they find themselves following different laws, different vehicles. You drive on different sides of the road.
Sure.
And I think that's one of the things that our pastors have to keep in mind. Just because a church somewhere else is reopening doesn't mean your church is ready. I think we have to keep the context. Are we rural or urban? You know, are we more densely populated in our area? I mean, there's a lot of factors. Our dashboard has to direct us more than what someone else is doing.
That's right. So as you listen to this call today, we pray that it encourages you and helps you. It'll be in time segments, so you get to listen from a state update. So you're from the national guys. We'll have a full panel together. At the very end, you'll have opportunity to go to our website, charlestonbaptist.net, as well as the Screven website, and get some information on who to contact. Who can I get more information from? We're here for you. We're in it with you. And we thank God that we're pressing through this together. So God bless you. Hey, thank you for being on this call today. I know you've had plenty of Zooms here and there, but this is another consultation. And for our two associations here in Greater Charleston, Richard Odom and I are excited about being able to meet together with you, with these great leaders that have joined us. Our two churches, or our two associations, reach to the greater region of Greater Charleston, 140 churches. And so we also know there's a greater alliance as well with Mission Charleston that we're reaching out to as well. And so
we're excited about being a part of this group today with you. The goal of this time really is to think through the logistical dynamics of beginning to move back toward reentry. What does that look like? So I want to introduce to you who's here on the call with us today. So grateful to have them. First of all, our state convention leaders. We're grateful to have Gary Hollingsworth, Executive Director for the South Carolina Baptist Convention. Also glad to have Chief Strategist Jay Hardwick with the South Carolina Baptist Convention as well on this call. So we have two state guys that they're in the family with us, and we're so grateful for their leadership. Then we have guys that we love and are connecting with nationally that are with us today. Mark Clifton with the North American Mission Board. Mark is the Director of Church Replanting, and we're grateful for him out there in Kansas City. Also grateful from Texas to get the shout out there from William Vanderblomen. William, grateful to have you, CEO of the Vanderblomen. I got to say it right. It's hard to spell, but I can say it. Vanderblomen Search Group. And we're so grateful. They have been doing amazing things to help our churches across the nation, even the world, to think through many dynamics. So we're grateful. And then I'm glad for my good friend, Jeff Surratt, who's on the call today. He's with Generis, and I'm so grateful for his time with us. He's a ministry specialist. Jeff has been involved in many different things, even served with Rick Warren at Saddleback for a number of years. Started, though, here right in Charleston at Seacoast Church, so I teased him in the background there today. So just brought a little home back to Jeff out in Denver, and really grateful for Jeff's part being on this call as well. And so, you know, today, a lot of churches are asking questions like, what's next? Some are saying, what's best? And I think both those questions are the right ones to be asking. One thing we want to do today is really to help churches think through how do they navigate forward? How do they drive their congregation toward what's next? And so, Richard, you and I were talking earlier about the kind of lanes that we're driving in. And maybe you can speak to that a little bit.
You know, one of the things that Craig and I discussed was most of us that'll be part of this call, or many of us, have been on mission trips. We've been in other parts of the world. The traffic laws change from country to country, the side of the road you drive on, the kind of car you drive. And we recognize that this is going to be the same principle with our churches. Just because a rural church is able to do something doesn't necessarily mean one of our urban churches, or just because one of our smaller churches can meet in a way maybe some of our mega churches won't be able to. And so there's just a lot of aspects that we think are going to be very different. And we want to try to address that today, that one size will not fit all. And so that's our concern. And we want to emphasize that you got to drive in your lane and what works for you.
Yeah. And that's one thing to keep in mind as we drive in the lane that we're called to. On either side, there's lines that we stay within the lines, right? Lines are our friends. So on one side, you have what's rightful and that's subject to governing authorities. On the other side, you have the lane of what's responsible. Everything may be lawful, but doesn't mean it's permissible, except that we love others more than we love ourselves and seek the good of others before we seek our own good. And so that's important. But the middle space of that lane is reasonableness. And Paul said it this way, Philippians 4:5, let your reasonableness be known to all men. The Lord is at hand. And so we have an opportunity to really think through that. So we're going to hear some good practical wisdom. So I want you to think about this as church leaders today, and we're going to talk from this context. You have a new dashboard. It's kind of like we're all used to driving automatic transmission cars, and now we have to relearn how to drive a car again, i.e. how do we re-enter our churches back in from this pandemic? So it's like us all beginning to drive manual 5-speed stick shift. And if you've ever done that, it takes a little while to learn how to get that cadence down. That's how it feels. I know I've been talking to leaders. It just feels different, and it's going to be different. So there's a new normal that goes with that. And so we want to talk about, how do you know how to read the dashboard? How do you work the pedals? How do you shift the gears? And so today we want to give you some top line perspectives with these leaders today. So we're so grateful to have you on this call.
You know, we want to begin by speaking with Gary Hollingsworth, the executive director for the state convention. Gary's been very connected with the leadership as well as the churches through this pandemic, and also Jay Hardwick, our chief strategist. I know that I have had opportunity to speak with both of them through both personal as well as Scott Shields, who works directly with us as director of missions. And the information has been free-flowing. But today the governor spoke, and we're very gracious very grateful for that being lined up for us as pastors and leaders. So I would like to know what your takeaways were today. Either one can speak first, but what would have been the takeaways that you would have for us as convention leaders, pastors? How would you say that Governor speaking to us today impacts us as we move forward?
Right. And let me kind of take the first crack at that, if I may. And I just want to say again to Craig and Richard, thank y'all. Y'all are on the leading edge around our state in offering these kinds of opportunities, not just for general information, but really, I think, helpful information. I love the visual images that you're presenting. And with your permission, we will share those around. I think most of us think visually, so I appreciate that. In a nutshell, our governor, Henry McMaster, today, basically, we're very blessed because he basically, if I can just sum it up like this, he said, pastors, do the right thing. Follow the guidelines that have been established by healthcare professionals, by what mandates that he and his office may be putting forth. Our governor here in South Carolina, unlike other states, and every state is different, but he continued and has throughout this pandemic to keep churches and ministries in the essential category inside our state. And that alone has been huge because he has considered the work of the church to be essential ministry inside South Carolina. Now, if I were to kind of narrow it down slightly, because we didn't want to press him too hard, he has given a lot of latitude. And I think what I heard our governor say today, as long as we stay within those boundaries, and I think, Craig, the way you've outlined it here, we stay within those lines, then he wants us to run as far and as fast as we can. Now, obviously, a church that's gathering with 1,000 people in one building and they're seated next to each other, absolutely not. That would be unwise. And obviously, he was not suggesting that. Probably what we heard, I think for the retailers around our state who are starting to slowly open, he's been maintaining that 20% of capacity. And so that means if a church is running 100, that means don't put more than 20 people in your building at one time. And you put those 20 people in your building and make sure that they are adequately socially distanced and spaced, and take any other precautions, whether it's hand sanitizers, making sure the building is clean, taking temperatures, whatever needs to happen within your context. And I think that helps us begin to get some idea, okay, my church runs 300. What does that look like for me? I may need to add a service. I may need to add a venue. And but to put it in a nutshell, outside of what I would call that 20% kind of thumbnail, 20% of capacity as a number to work with, he pretty much has said, stay within the social distancing guidelines, and you men are smart enough to figure it out. Don't mess it up. I mean, that's I'm putting it in pretty crass terms, but that's what we heard him say today.
Gotcha.
And Jay, you may have had something. You may have heard something different from that.
No, that's spot on. I think the bottom line of it was the governor was very supportive of churches and pastors, as he has been all along. Certainly in thinking of and clarifying or classifying pastors and churches in the essential category, but also just affirming the important work that pastors and churches do in a community. The difference that is made. The leadership opportunity that a pastor has, the influential opportunity, the serving opportunity that the church has. And so the governor didn't want to do anything, and he's maintained this all along. He didn't want to do anything that is going to curtail a church from leading and serving well in its community as its community weathers the storm, so to speak, and then begins to hopefully here in the near future begin to recover some or take those steps to recovery. Obviously, the practical question every pastor in the state and every pastor across the country is asking is, when can we start, you know, regathering? And so it was helpful to hear the governor speak in a term of basically saying, here's a very broad guideline and we trust you. We trust you as good leaders. You're going to do the right thing. You're going to be in step with us. You're going to be in step with your local leadership. And so overall, it was a very affirming and very encouraging message and tone from our governor to our pastors today.
That's great. That's great to hear. And, you know, that's great to give those parameters. At the same time, as you can imagine, I'm a leader taking that in. I listened to some of that today. I'm thinking, okay, that's great. I just felt another weight on my shoulders because I've got to figure this thing out. And, you know, that's the one thing that I think that's important about us. That's why we're called leaders, right? We lead mm-hmm. through, we help our churches think through. We're in a place that we're all inexperienced in. So thank you, Gary and Jay, for giving us that context. And I think for this conversation, it'll help because every state's a little bit different in how they're rolling things out. I think our governor's been cautious and careful, conservative, but yet also very gracious as it relates to the local church and seeing it as an essential. So then it brings us to this question today that we're going to talk about, and that is that how do we create this church leader dashboard? So the first place is let's look at the windshield and look at the back window a little bit, and let's begin to kind of ask some key questions that leaders need to be thinking through. And that's something I hope we get from today is what are the key questions we need to ask? And I want to start, Jeff, with you. I heard you and Greg and your brother on a call, and I think you asked this question, and I'm borrowing it and I'm stealing it here. Yeah, what will never be the same, or what is never coming back to the Sunday gathering? I thought that was a very strong, straight-up question. Speak to that for a minute. What are some things that you're thinking through and you're hearing?
Yeah, I love what, and I'm sorry, I forgot who said it, but already said on this conversation, of the fact that that answer doesn't apply to all churches of all sizes in all contexts. And I'm very familiar with South Carolina. I spent 14 years in Charleston and for Charleston people in Mount Pleasant. So you'll know whether you like me or hate me because I know how that works. And so honestly, even a church in Mount Pleasant versus a church in Somerville versus a church in Monk's Corner, you know, versus a church on up toward Columbia, they're going to be different answers. I think for smaller churches, there are some things that I honestly think within a few weeks, maybe months, for some smaller churches, especially maybe in a little more rural context, it may look and feel a lot like it did before. Large churches, obviously, significant changes for a long period of time. Some of the things that I think are exciting that we've stepped into is this idea of connecting online. Craig, you remember when we first started diving into that years ago. William remembers as well. And at that time, it was just kind of it was an obscure thing out there that churches did. Now it's very acceptable. Teaching by video is now accepted. I know when Seacoast started teaching by video, there might've been some even on this call that thought we were crazy heretics, and now we're all doing it. So we're all crazy heretics. And I'm not saying everybody should go teach by video. That's not the point. The point is a barrier has come down there. Another barrier, another thing that I don't think will change, we don't want to change, is in this time, families have had to take on the responsibility for being the spiritual developers in their house. You cannot have the concept of we drop the kids off at Sunday school or at church and they do that religious Bible thing and then we do it the rest of the week. You've had to take on all that responsibility. I think another thing that will probably never go back is I think there will be a desire for meeting in smaller groups. And of course, for smaller churches, that's already a built-in thing. There is some huge advantage of being a smaller church always. The fact that you know everybody, the fact that you're comfortable around people, the fact that you know each other's families. Well, in this time when people are cautious and scared, that's going to be a huge plus. I think as churches get larger, I think we need to lean into that idea that people do want to connect. They do want to come back together, but they're going to want to do it in a smaller environment. So I think those are some of the things that have changed that will change forever. You know, some things we'll go right back to.
That's great. That's so helpful to kind of give some of those parameters and think through them. And Mark Clifton, I know that you work with our denomination of churches around the country, different sizes, especially in the area of revitalization. So what a jolt this has been for many churches that we're not at all used to anything online. And that whole thing about changing your methodologies and the desire and the free will to do that, well, guess what? It was imposed upon, right? So right. As we talk to churches right now in our denomination, what are some of those things that you see that as you would talk to churches on this call, to really have to think through, to begin to make those adjustments that are necessary to reemerge, or even just to get through the rest of this pandemic period? Maybe you speak to some of that.
Well, I deal mostly with normative-sized churches of less than 100, 150 people, and many of them bivocational. And one of the things, as they reemerge, it's going to be a really good time for them to use the phrase mission critical. And when they begin to come back, we're helping them understand what are things they need to bring back, and maybe what are some things they need to not bring back. as they look at what's mission critical for them going forward, many of them probably had too many activities for the number of people that were engaged. They were perhaps stretched in their leadership. Everybody might have three or four jobs. Looking at this coming out, can we simplify it? Can we make a structure that's more appropriate to the size of the church, that is more functioning and actually achieves more in terms of the goals of the church of making disciples and making Jesus known and serving the community? So it's a good time to reset for churches that, you know, especially in a normative sized church, you may have some things that have been going on for years because there's a few members who find great fulfillment in doing those things, even though they don't really help the congregation any. This is a good time to be able to say we're going to have to make a reset and look at things that are mission critical. So I think in that sense, it's going to be healthy. The really unknown thing for us in terms of replanting churches that are near the point of closure, I've dealt with a lot of churches in the last few weeks who were at the point of closure. And when COVID came, they've just sort of gone into hibernation. They don't have any online presence. They're just sort of waiting it out. And I'm not sure they're going to come out of hibernation, frankly. So that's another issue we're going to have to look at and see what happens with those churches.
Yeah, that's a lot of things to think about. And that front windshield's got a lot of things in it. But the key question, like you said, is that reset button. What do we need to put in front of us? What's mission critical? That's a really good word. William, you work with churches from all denominations and have been providing a lot of resources through your ministry and your group. You know that old business saying, the question you ask, what do you stop, start, and continue, right? And so as you look out the windshield or look in the back window, what are some things that you're coaching churches to think about as it relates to that kind of dynamic?
Well, you know, most of our time is spent in the normal world, whatever that was, helping churches find their pastor, right? So we've been doing a lot of things. And if you go to, if you want a bunch of free resources, reopeningchurch.com, you'll find a lot of things there, from government assistance to what do you do with kids ministry to all the sort of blocking and tackling questions that we've been trying to answer. But as we think about helping churches find their pastor going forward, a few things come to my mind. A lot of very large churches have stopped hiring for the moment. And I think that's wise. Let's let some dust settle. Let's see what the giving patterns are really going to do. The market's like an emotional roller coaster right now. So who knows where things are actually going to land by year end. I'm just thankful this didn't happen in the fall, then ruined year-end giving. Can't imagine what that would have done. But I think something that's not getting discussed very much is just how important the normal size church is going to be going forward. They will be the first ones to be able to open back up. My friends, like Jeff's nephew that's got a brand new big room there in South Carolina, and ain't gonna be able to use it for quite a while. And so I think the advent or the reemergence of the county seat church, as you might call it, is going to be really important. And a few things are going to have to change for that to happen. One is pastors are going to have to change the way they preach. Now, what do I mean by that? I've got a pastor friend just several blocks down the road from me, pastors of mid-sized church, fairly traditional, and he's scared to death. And I said, well, what are you afraid of? And he said, William, now my congregation's finally figured out they can Netflix whatever preaching they want. They can YouTube the best preacher on the planet, and why would they listen to me ever again? And so I think two things I've noticed are emerging that we're going to be looking for more and more in pastors that we're talking to is, A, preaching is going to have to be micro-contextual. Today, in Due West, South Carolina, we saw this happen. What does God have to say about that? Like super contextualized, down to neighborhoods within neighborhoods. So you're really speaking for your parish, to use an older term, in a way that can't be Netflixed. And maybe people are going to hear Matt Chandler, and that's a supplement to the preaching that they're getting at their home church. And that's wonderful. I mean, it's not like you can overdose on God's word. I don't think that's possible. But for the local church to really thrive, I think you're going to see pastors, they're going to have to come along and fall in love with the town they're in. Not that they didn't before, but to the extent of shaping all of their preaching through that lens. You know, Billy Graham, you say, I have to get the Bible out and put it on one side of me and the newspaper on the other. It's going to have to be the local newspaper, not just Apple News or Google News or not even just Fox News. Like, it's going to have to be micro-contextualized. I think the other thing you're going to see is a reemergence of what really happened after World War II. People went to church for their neighborhood and for their community and for a pastor that they knew loved them. You know, in the church growth movement, which has been so good, and we love large churches. I think of the 400 largest churches in the country, 250 of them are clients of ours. So we do a lot of large church work, but half our work is with normal sized churches. And what we're seeing there is what happened in just after World War II. People went to church because they knew their pastor cared for them. I had a friend who was going to another Presbyterian church a couple towns over some years back, and I said, your preacher isn't really the best preacher in the world. Why do you go there? And he said, my preacher can't preach himself out of a wet paper bag, but he was there when my child was born. Yeah. He was there when mama died. And I'll sit through his sermon for what he's done for me. So I think, like, there's the basic pastoral skills that we saw in the 60s emerge of the local parish minister. They're going to reemerge as a new gold standard. Because the fact is, you can Netflix all the preaching. And they said, they call it the top 40 pop chart for a reason. There's not room for 50. There's not room for 100. There's only room for a few. And God has anointed some men and women across the planet to preach like nobody else. And they're going to get most of the views that are out there. So I think the main thing I'm seeing that we're going to have to keep doing and dial in even more, if you're talking about stop, start, and change. Stop competing on a ubiquitous platform with everybody on the planet. Start falling in love with your community deeper than ever before, and change the way you're preaching so that it's completely contextualized to what exactly your community is going through.
Wow.
Hey, Craig, can I tag on to that? Because William just, I so think he hit a huge piece there, that the church is just going to be more and more local. I think the neighborhood is going to matter more than the congregation, because we haven't seen the congregation in months. And at the same time, as we think through this, I totally agree what William's saying is, now we can see every amazing preacher in the world online. But you know who's watching those guys? It's the church junkies. It's the very connected to church people. The unchurched people, the people that are, William, I'm watching them. The unchurched people, the people that are barely connected to church, they've never heard of, they wouldn't know what an Andy Stanley was. I lived in Saddleback Valley, within 3 miles of Saddleback Church, Rick Warren, one of the best known pastors in the world. My neighbors never heard of the guy, had no idea who he was. So I think to William's point, that I think we are definitely going to see the parish church, the neighborhood church. And I think we can relax a little bit about, now my people have seen all these guys. Yeah, they have. And like William said, Andy's not going to be there when your baby's born and your mom dies. You are. And your community, your neighborhood does not care what that guy in Atlanta does. Doesn't care at all. In fact, I wouldn't even reference him because they don't know who he is. And so I think that's one of the best things about this, is exactly what William's saying. The big church is going to be okay. Big church is going to be great. William, like you said, I work almost exclusively with mega churches. They're going to be all right. The normal sized church, I think, has an opportunity right here to really flourish.
Wow, that's great stuff. William, you got something there to add?
Well, I was just going to tag on that in the middle of all this, the normal sized church happening, I think the mega churches that do satellite sites, unless they have one of the very best preachers on the planet, you're going to see more and more of what Matt Chandler's done, where it's more of a network of churches with local pastors for each of those local areas. It's going to be very hard to transfer preaching over multiple states. There are a few that can do it that have a very unique gift, but the idea of growing your church, it's just going to be a different kind of growth. And one of the ways I think you'll see that, I've heard a huge frustration with pastors over the last, I'll call it 5 or 6 years, where they say, oh, we're flat or we're declining. And then you really dig a little deeper and what you find out is they have not lost any attenders. They've just lost frequency of attendance. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to change. where you were having to revert to 3-week sermon series or something real short or one shot wonder. Now, because people know if I can't make it, I can be online. You can continue your preaching in a way that speaks to that community in a continual and spiritually developmental way. I also think it'll be for a while. It won't be forever. But I think the idea that people are going to come once or twice a month, once this is, quote, over enough for people to not be afraid, they're going to have their rear end in church more often than not. And I know I'm talking about churched people right now. I also think there'll be some spiritual seekers. I mean, I know there's a whole millennial generation that's been, you know, waiting to start their life, mortality just got very real. And that's why we had a baby. I don't know that anyone has a nursery big enough for 9 months from now, because there've been a lot of people at home a long time.
Good word. Well, you know, that's something I was thinking about as we think about shifting a gear here, is that, you know, we're talking about so much change, everything you all have just said. But here's what I appreciate what you've said is I believe you've just breathed life back into some pastors that have been feeling the weight and exasperation of the whole idea of competition and all that. So thank you all for your voices around that. That is so helpful. Let me throw this at you, and Richard's going to ask some questions. And it's the whole idea. You're driving the car. You see the windshield, the back window. You're looking around you. But now let's talk about speed, because what I'm hearing everyone talk about is when, right? That's the big question. When to the regathering? And in our North American churches, we are very Sunday-centric in our thinking. That's just the way we are. Now, we know the church is more than just Sunday. We believe that. In mission, we push it. But that whole thing, when you go into a small town, that speed limit drops. And if you're not careful, that sheriff's waiting for you, you know, and he'll get you. If you're on the highway that's fast-paced, we're going at it. You know, you can cheat a little more, it seems like, on that highway. So the speed and calibration of what we do and how we operate. Rich is going to ask some questions on that whole idea about speed. How do we think about shifting gears and all those different dynamics?
You know, as we think about that, one of the things that I'm hearing, I want to echo what Craig just told us, and what we're picking up is the new norm is going to have to be embraced. I'm hearing too many guys say, when can we go back to normal? And, you know, my only answer is never. You're not going back to normal. And I love what we were just told when Mark mentioned mission critical. What really matters? And that's been our echo, Mark, is trying to get the pastors to really reevaluate what's critical. Now, thinking about what's critical, and we're talking about speed and where we're headed, we've talked about some very critical things in the process of this. And so I guess one of the questions I would like to throw out, and it can be fielded, if you were pastoring today, what would be some things that you would say needs to be looked at? We spoke, for instance, yesterday, we heard a chief of police in Charleston tell us that there needed to be some careful planning, some education, and then a plan of implementation. As we move into this. So what would be, if you were pastoring today, what would be that word that you would say to the guys, this is the speed I see, these are some things you can consider?
Well, I don't know which of us are closest to having recently been a senior pastor. I'm 4 years out, having left Emmanuel Baptist Church in Little Rock. So let me take a stab at it, because I thought through that. So I have a smart aleck answer and I have a serious answer. So my smart aleck answer is I would call my director of missions in my state staff and ask them what they thought I ought to do. That's a answer. National experts, you know. The serious answer would be, let me kind of frame it this way. I think there would be some, there are two sides to that. On the regathering, coming back to worship, what all that looked like, I'll start there. First of all, I will promise you that the day that we announce that we're coming back, our facility will be the cleanest it's ever been in the history of humanity. It will be sanitized. It would be from top to bottom, and I would do anything and everything, whatever I had to do to make sure, not just that one time, but maintaining a standard that we were proud to talk about not because we pat ourselves on the back, but we want people to walk in there with confidence that we've done our job. So I think starting there as a pastor, that begins with me, and I'd make sure that that building, every area was properly sanitized. Secondly, I would certainly maintain those standards. I do think that this is a sliding scale. And if my governor, if I'm pastoring in South Carolina, and if I'm in a 1,000-seat sanctuary, we're not putting more than 200 in there, and they're going to make sure that they're socially distanced. We would probably also be checking temperatures when people came in, you know, with the forehead gun. I think I would go above and beyond for a couple of reasons. I would want my people to feel safe, but I also want to be a strong, positive witness to the and testimony to the community. I don't want to give the community any reason to think that we're being slackers in any way. And I think that's a witness, a powerful witness. So I think in the short version, I would just take those standards, contextualize those if I was in a small or a rural or medium or large church, and I would figure that out as a pastor. What does that look like? And I loved hearing the contextualization, William. That's spot on. I mean, and in you as well, Jeff, all of the things I've heard here are, I think it does give great hope for churches, particularly that aren't in the mega church category. But I think that same standard needs to apply to the church running 50 or 5,000. All of those standards need to be the same. So internally, I would make sure that we were following those standards. But the second thing, if I were a local pastor still, I would be making this our moment. We were always an outwardly focused church anyway. I mean, that's just my heart and passion. That's why God, I believe, called me here to lead a convention of churches, to turn those arrows from outside, inside to outside. But I think one of the things I would be doing would be finding new and fresh and creative ways, because people are hungry and people have thought more about morbidity. I think evangelism right now, the possibility of talking to people about their personal relationship and where they're going to spend eternity has never been brighter. And so I would be shifting away from a lot of programmatic kinds of things. Y'all come, but let's go. And I think right now there's a hunger for that by people in this opportunity. But I think that there's an openness to that in communities and people who heretofore have not been open to the gospel. So kind of in a nutshell, I would come back gradually. And I love the images that you guys have given. I would follow those dictates, but I would also be making sure that we were turning our focus and our attention, not just back on the inside, but staying focused on the outside. That's kind of in a 30,000 foot view. If I were pastoring today at Emmanuel Baptist Church in Little Rock, that's what we would be talking about.
You know, if I could just add something to that. One of the things that Craig and I've talked about is we operate within bookends. And so we've talked about our safety for years, right? How important the safety is. And we've talked about the child checks and things, and then the security. And we've talked at length about how to keep people safe since 9/11. It came up, and we've talked a lot about the sanitation component. So if you were pastoring today, along with what Gary has said to us, what about that sanitation component? And I love where we began, but maybe and develop that into your answer. I believe, William, you were about to speak to that.
Well, not to harp on contextualization, but I think it's just going to, the when is going to be different for a lot of different reasons. I love what the Surratt brothers did when they say, get your groups of 10 and then find four of the groups of 10 so you can go to 50. And then that is brilliant. And I've stolen it and run with it. It's amazing. I think that, you know, I go to a traditional Methodist church, and I don't know that we're ever more than 50% full, even at 11 o'clock. And I think that's probably true for a lot of people that are tuning into this webinar. So 50% doesn't really mean anything. However, what if half of your congregation is over 65, which is very common among the normal church that's out there? And what if you're reaching a predominantly at-risk population? I mean, you can look at the demographic studies, and I'm not doing anything other than repeating what my friends that are pastoring African American churches are saying. They're like, this is a different, you don't understand. This is different. There's a different insecurity factor. The rates are what they are. So I would just, if you see a cookie cutter for when to open, run away from it, because cookie cutters are dead. That's that. And that sounds like I'm saying the same thing over and over, but I just think more than ever, my prayer every day is that I grow in wisdom. I figure if Jesus needed to grow in that, then probably I do too. And I think that we need to be women and men that are like the men of Issachar that understood their time, where you are, the flock God's given you to manage and to shepherd, and then to begin to frame up the question of when should we open?
That's good.
Hey, I'm sorry to jump in real quick. One of the things I think is super important is for pastors to recognize what pastors are good at and what pastors aren't good at. And for the most part, I don't know about your seminary training. We didn't do a lot in epidemiology. We didn't do a whole lot of courses in sanitation of buildings. And yet I see pastors that are just experts at it right now on Facebook. It's amazing. You said, what would we do if we were pastors right now? If I were pastoring in Charleston, I would go to MUSC, or if I were in Columbia, I'd go to the university, and I would find the highest level person, medical staff person, that would talk to me. And I would say, I want you to come to my building, and I want you to walk through what we should do to be the most sanitary, safe possible. I'm not saying that they dictate what you do, but I would talk to them. I'll give you just a quick example. When we were at the church in Charleston, my wife oversaw a children's ministry, and we got a lot of pushback on our nursery. So that's exactly what she went to do. She went to the pediatricians at MUSC, and the nurses brought them into the nurseries. They wrote the guidelines. Then we published the guidelines and said, these were created with medical staff. If I were opening, that's the first thing I would do on the sanitation side. I was step out of that as a pastor. I'd bring in the best medical people. They don't have to be in your church. They'll talk to you. And I would let them help us write what the guidelines are. And they're probably going to be exactly what was just said. You know, take temperatures and sanitizer, all that kind of stuff. But that doesn't need to come from me. It doesn't need to come from my staff. It needs to come from people who are recognized as experts. The last thing I want to say is in the speed limit. Another analogy would be if I had a 16-year-old daughter, and if some kid took her out and drove 100 miles an hour around, the next kid who dated her, I wouldn't want to know how close to the speed limit he got. I would want to know how his horse and buggy was going to operate. And so we've had some yahoos, not in South Carolina, but across the country, that have just gone so fast and done so much. And church people are like, oh, unchurch people are like, all church people are nuts. All church people don't care anything about it. And so as I'm thinking speed, I'm not going to let medical people tell me what to do. I'm not going to let unchurch people tell me what to do, but I am going to be informed. I am going to figure out what is the perception in our community of the church. I don't want to be that church that is first one in, first one doing everything. Unless we're all doing it together, then sure, we'll do it that way. But I would be really cautious about hitting the speed limit. I would want to be back a little bit from the speed limit.
That's good. You know, and I want to ask Mark a question in light of that too, because Mark, we deal with a lot of churches that are in revitalization or being replanted. And what I'm finding, Jeff, that was a great analogy about, especially a boy dating your daughter, right? watch out. But when you go through these smaller towns, the speed limit's slower, but I'm finding a lot of our smaller towns, rural communities, they want to get back to church faster. And so my concern is that we could jettison, Jeff, like you're saying, and be careless and not be cautious in our perspective going in. Mark, speak to that a little bit, because I wonder.
I think the biggest issue that I see is are you prepared as a pastor to deal with the wide variety of opinions that are going to be in your congregation on this?
That's right.
The huge variety of opinions. And I don't care. Look, I spent all of my time with normally sized churches under 100, 150. And we've been harking for a decade now that what we really lost is the value of the neighborhood church. So hopefully this will help us bring it back. We just haven't talked much about it from a national perspective, the importance of the church of less than 100 people who impact their neighborhood greatly. And that's, I think I could go on for a long time about that. But even a normative sized church, you're going to have people in that church who listen to one form of social media that say, look, this thing is overblown. It's just a way of people trying to keep us from doing well. It's taking our freedom away. We've got to get back. And you're going to have other people say, we shouldn't even be meeting right now. This is the most dangerous pandemic. We don't know what's going to happen. How are you as a pastor going to negotiate that? I mean, how are you going to be able to keep unity in your church? I think if we're not aware of that, I know we are, but if we're not proactive with it, I think it's got potential to do some real damage in church fellowship. You know, people have strong opinions about this. And you as a pastor, you're not going to be able to talk them away from their view on it. You're not going to be able to sit down with someone who's passionate that this is overblown and we need to get back to normal. And you're not going to be able to talk them off of that. And the other side that believes very adamantly that this is still very dangerous and we maybe shouldn't even be meeting. You're not. So how are you going to work through that? And I think that's a thing you got to deal with a lot of prayer. You've got to let the Holy Spirit lead you. And you may have to pull out of your deck that one card that if you play very often, you're going to look for another church. But every now and then you've got that card to play, which is, I'm your pastor. I may not be right about this, but we got to make a choice. And for me, will you just agree that this is what we're going to do for the next few months? And if you've been a good pastor to these people and you've got some credibility in the bank, you can play that card. If you've not been a good pastor and you don't have much credibility, these are going to be really tenuous days for you as you begin to launch, because people are going to be very opinionated that we're not doing this well enough or we're being too lax or too strict. And you're going to have to be very much aware of how to negotiate that. And let me just really encourage you, even in a normative sized church, whoever your plurality of leaders is, your deacons, whatever your leadership is, get them all on the same page. Yeah. So you're not out there on your own and could easily be cut off and thrown under the bus. So that's another whole issue that I think we really have to be aware of as we ramp back up.
Yeah. And Mark, to your point, so well said, is and really in the whole flow of this conversation, one of the recommendations that we're making to churches is to put together a logistics team, gather the people in your church, gather even people in your community that might not be a part of your church, to Jeff's point of finding that key leader from a local hospital or whatever it might be, so that you're not having to carry the weight entirely as a pastor. And especially to Mark's point, thinking of the normative sized church that may only have a solo pastor on staff. So you're not having to carry that weight, but you're able to share that leadership. It's a great opportunity to even raise up new leaders, and it's an opportunity to make a better collective wisdom decisions that are going to be hopefully based in fact and will have the full support of the congregation and great connection and great witness to the community in terms of going forward. And so that's one of the key recommendations that our church strengthening team is making to churches right now is really before you make much in terms of final decisions, form a team. And let those decisions and those processes be shared so the pastor's not having to carry the full weight all by himself.
And validate feelings on both sides. I mean, just do. Just let people vent to you. Don't argue with them about they're right or they're wrong. Just validate their feelings. But we've got to find a way to move forward. And so we're going to move forward as a family. And I don't want to get down too much into the details, but I do think it's important to, once you come up with how you're going to do it in the next few weeks, print it out, write it up, put it on the line, let people read it, and then print it on large posters and put it at the entrance of your church, put it in front of your restrooms so that these signs are everywhere what we're doing. So it's very clear, only one person in the restroom at a time. We maintain social distancing so that when people come to your church for gathered worship, it's all around them what we're doing. There's no question about what we're supposed to do. I don't think you can over-communicate it enough.
This has been so great, though. Good feedback that we've been getting from you guys. Man, we could park here for a long time. I am borrowing the analogy again of car park. That's good. Throw that in there. Analogies can run too far, but we've touched on some really key things today, mm-hmm. Richard. You know, we talked about shifting gears, and that is that don't just go back into the norm. Let's get back to church and do church like we did before. No, we got to think differently. Think about your neighborhood. Think about your context. We've talked about some warning lights. Be cautious and be careful. We've talked about pumping the brakes a little bit. And so we've given you some gauges here. We hope that will be helpful. What I think would be good maybe to wrap up our time is to give us some final statements from each of you. Maybe some things that you would say, hey, I would say here's the two key questions you got to ask yourself right now as you think about putting this plan together or re-entering into the process, or just a comment of something that you wanted to say, didn't get a chance to. And then next week, we'll have another conversation that will get a little bit more down into pragmatics. Today, we touched on some, but today was more about principle, wisdom, and application to your heart to that. So I'm going to ask, Jay, would you start us off with that? Give us some final comments or a question maybe you want to ask, church to ask.
Sure. Craig, this has been phenomenal. I've learned a ton and I've taken a lot of notes. So thank you all for your wisdom. And thank you, Craig and Richard, for putting this together. I think, and this is moving past some of the practical things and thinking a little bit more long term, and this was being mentioned earlier with the talk of like what multi-site churches may look very, very different going forward, the neighborhood church and all of that. I think this may be one of the greatest opportunities for church planting, church multiplication that we've seen in North America in quite some time, especially from our larger sized churches, because the reality of that church of 1,000 or more, maybe even not even up to 1,000, maybe 600 or 700, the likelihood of that church gathering in that size anytime in the near future is very, very slim. And so what it's going to necessitate perhaps is an opportunity for pastors and leaders to think very creatively about how could we raise up a new leader, perhaps positioned in a new venue that's not on our church facility. Maybe it's a neighborhood clubhouse. Maybe it's even another local church that's willing to share a facility to start a new gospel work in a new area, wherever it might be, that a new leader could be raised up and could be empowered by a church leadership to go and begin what would become a new congregation. Just believe that there are some great opportunities coming forward in the multiplication of leaders and the multiplication of churches as a result of this. And we're very excited to see how it's all going to unfold. I know we have more questions than answers right now, but that is certainly an opportunity that I see God stirring up as we get past some of these initial practical ideals of just getting back to some semblance of gathering, but then being able to look at the strategic big picture. What has God stirred up and brought about that is a unique opportunity for such a time as this? And I'm just, my heart's really stirred by the church planting and multiplication opportunity that's in front of us.
That's great. Thank you, Jay.
I'll go next. Great. And only because I've got a 3 o'clock with another group I'm about to join all of us, but I'll be quick. Mine are just maybe 2 questions that I think every pastor and leader, and they're kind of related just with 2 different applications, but it would be this. How will decisions we are making today, I as a leader and our decision makers, how are our decisions we're making today, how will they strengthen our church for the future? And number 2, how will our decisions we're making today better serve our community?
Great questions. Thank you, Gary. Jeff?
Yeah, no, I love it. I love what Gary said, what Jay said. I want to go hang out with Jay. Let's talk multiplication for a little while and with Mark. I would say the same thing, honestly. I think as a leader, the place you need to be, we all have to grieve the past. The past was awesome. I mean, I've been in this all my life. I love the church as it was. It's gone, and that's okay. We grieve that. Now what I think we need to be praying God for is a bigger vision. We need to be praying God for what is the big thing you're going to do going forward, and I think it's going to look different. And Mark, I think you are in one of the best spots in the church right now, in the church overall, because I think the opportunities for partnerships, mergers, whatever you want to call it. Jay talked about multiplication. I think some of that multiplication is going to be as churches go, let's not go out of business. Let's not disappear. Let's connect together in healthy ways in what William talked about. I think this neighborhood piece, this parish size thing with a greater degree of partnership that'll look very different than what multi-site has looked like. I just think there's huge potential. So whatever size church you're in as a pastor, my encouragement is that your prayer today and tomorrow morning is, God, give me a big vision. Let me let go of what the past was. Give me a big vision about what you're doing next.
That's great.
Yeah. Well, we're in a world where North America, where 4,000 churches a year close their doors, and that number continues to increase. Among Southern Baptists, we see 900 Southern Baptist churches cease to exist every year. 77% of those were in communities of more than 100,000 people. So why are we closing so many churches? Well, there's a lot of reasons, but one of them is an overdependence on programs and personalities and an underdependence on the power of the Holy Spirit. And I'm just really reminded of when Jesus, the multitude show up, and the first thing the disciples say is, send these people away. And Jesus turns to Philip and he says, where are you going to buy bread that these may eat? Sort of implying, Philip, you're able to buy bread on a normal day, but this isn't a normal day. So now what are you going to do? Mm-hmm. And I think it's okay for us to be in a place where it's not a normal day anymore, because we can't rely on our programs and our personalities and all of our methods that we could rely on before. Now, going forward, we're either going to rely on the Holy Spirit and what Jesus wants us to do with his church, or it's going to fail. Mm. And that's not a bad place to be.
Good word.
Pretty hard to add to this wisdom. This is really good. I love Gary's emphasis on eternity. I mean, people have had their cage rattled like never before. My 26-year-old for the first time has had to face, you mean it isn't a bull market every year? There's just a unique moment for reaching the tender part of the heart. But I think if I could add one thing, Craig, to the wisdom that's been added in this closing round is, you know, maybe you've got a week or two before your church starts meeting, maybe it's a month or two, but I don't know that there'll be another season in your ministry where you'll have this much time to sit still before God. Mm. And so I think if I were asking a question, I'd say, how is it with my soul? Mm. You know, I think of Jesus going out in the desert for 40 days, 40 nights before he got to work. And we're kind of sitting in one of those moments. And I know we're all tired of quarantine and we've got Zoom hangovers and all that sort of thing. But I just wonder if I won't look back and say, man, did I miss a chance to get alone with God and let him work on me so I'd be ready to do his work? So that's kind of where I'd focus.
Wow.
There's just two things I won't take but 1 second. One of the two things that I walk away with today is it's exciting for churches, especially our normative churches, because we're going to return to pastoring again.
Yeah.
We're going to be able to, without apology, involve ourselves in the lives of the people in the church. And I think that's been missing in a lot of cases. I know that 28 years ago when I started pastoring, it was about being involved in the lives of the people. Last year when I left pastoring, it was about preaching and delivering the best of the best. And I'm excited for everyone to say we get to return to pastoring. But second of all, I think I heard loud and clear today, Craig, lead. Quit sitting, lead. And until we lead, we're going to be stagnant. And so thank you, gentlemen. I walk away with those two. I hope I didn't read into what wasn't there. But I hear, as Jeff said, be excited, mourn the past, excited about the future. And as Mark told us, lead. Don't wait for someone else to do it.
That's it. Yeah, that's so good. Well, it's been a great time to have this discussion. Just both the wisdom, but then also I just have sensed from each of you a spirit-filled really call and exhortation with gentleness and kindness to leaders that are listening and watching this. So I want to thank you for your time and you giving yourselves. We're going to put on this video at the very end every website of these ministries, these leaders, so that you can reach out, go to their website, look at the resources. You mentioned that one website again. Would you say it again, that one?
Yes, sure. Reopeningchurch.com.
Okay, reopeningchurch.com. Jeff, do you have one you throw out besides yours that I'm going to provide?
How could you do better than Williams? Come on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mark, anything with the North American Mission Board that you can point people to?
Yeah, churchreplanters.com. And then we have two care cohorts, one that meets on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern time for pastors. All we do is just put a panel together, and every Tuesday we just answer questions. And then actually it's Monday, not Tuesday. And then on Tuesday nights, we just started last night a bivocational pastors care cohort. And we do one for the Eastern U.S. and one for the Western U.S. So bivocational pastors, we didn't even talk about that today. But if you're a bivocational pastor and you're an essential worker, you are stressed out right now. And if you're a bivocational pastor and you've lost your job, you are really stressed out right now. And so we're doing some things specifically for bivocational pastors, which is about half of our pastors, by the way. We often forget that.
Yeah.
And they're really struggling immensely in this time.
Hey, Craig, I'm sorry. I had a brain fade. The website that you probably don't have is ministrytogether.com. That's where all of my resources are, at ministrytogether.com. Yeah.
Thank you for saying that. I'm so glad you mentioned that, Jeff. Super. Well, thank you guys for your time today. I know the Holy Spirit's going to use it and encourage a lot of leaders. And so as you're listening to this, just know, again, we're here for you. We're with you. We're in this together. And what a great time for us to be interdependent while we stay in a great dependency upon the Lord and his leading in each of our lives. So God bless you today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Love you guys. Thank you.